figado, figado, figado. Bust your shit, saw your windpipes and quickly break your elbows. Put my foot in your ass, Lord. Feel the force like a racehorse or like a herd of buffalo. Tell me why you be acting so. Freak the Spanish flow like Julio. Let they rock and die hard. Freeze like Chili Willy the Eskimo. Vigilante like Steven Seagal. I bust the Desperado. You fucking with the all-time pros. Spot the zoom lens. Ain't no weak niggas from transistor radios. Mission impossible when I expose. Once I diagnose those who be creeping. Blow them off, they tip their toes. Sorry, fake nigga, that's how it goes. Sport the sweet front bulletproof vests in case you complicate my nose. Handle situation. Just pronto appearances got you all hearing this when I be doing cameos. Should be ground hot like Tabasco. Fuck the fool ass nigga trespassing, caught up in my last soul. Stick a nigga bad like the last hole. Running up on motherfuckers late night, jumping out the Astro. No, 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 no. If you violate, I thought who dictates us like Fidel Castro. Make you dreadlock your afro. And when I'm done, I ride off the theme music by my man D'Angelo. We make this shit wow.
I got the muscle buster, we make this shit wow.
We got come on complete, we make this shit wow. Oh, y'all rude boys, lick a shot.
I got the muscle buster, we make this shit wow.
We got come on complete, we make this shit wow.
I got the muscle buster, we make this shit wow.
Oh, y'all rude boys, lick a shot. We got come on complete, we make this shit wow.
I got the muscle buster, I make this shit wow.
We got come on complete, we make this shit wow.
Yo,
oh, y'all rude boys, lick a shot.
I was ready to start off with a topic, and then I haven't heard Wild Hot in I don't even know how long, man.
Yeah, but right now, Carbon Icons is going, the song's too long. Are you talking about wrestling or what?
Is that what he's complaining about now?
Nah. The guy's helped us out with some promotion, so.
Yeah, no, he
I gotta give him some love for that.
Yeah, no.
Even though it's very hard for me to do.
Because you have to tell him to retweet the link?
No. He's been doing good with that, you know? I mean, he's a Muda scale success story. Let's just say that. Because I know he started watching wrestling because he was going to WrestleMania. He saw it a couple weeks before. But he did a little bit of crash course and has been listening to us and stuff. So it's nice to spread the knowledge. What you do with that knowledge is something totally different. Like complain about Busta Rhymes just kicking a crazy flow. One of the craziest you ever heard. But
I hope he doesn't complain about this.
Yeah.
That was music to my ears right there, man. I haven't heard that.
Well, it is music. Yeah.
To my ears.
It is to your ears, yeah. Air quote.
Yeah, put that on, Jason.
So before you get into your topic, I got a topic. I
got to go with my topic first.
Nah.
Because I just did because my topic isn't even wrestling.
Okay.
You know, we
oh, Game of Thrones?
No.
What?
No.
Okay.
What? We went to...
Did you watch Game of Thrones?
I did.
I did.
They
all have
hope. You know what I'm saying? You know, we had a topic, we talked about, what is it? We like 45 minutes on something that wasn't even, fantasy baseball.
Yeah.
So if, you know, if we're going to go off topic here and there, you know, I think on this day, I got to start off with that Star Wars trailer, man.
Let's just say it was a very good trailer, but that end was probably one of the best things I've ever seen. Yeah. The old, Chewbacca.
Old Han and Chewie.
The promo shot, dude.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the stuff, like, when you were a kid back in the... See, we were kids back in the 70s, so, like, 77, 78, like, 79 probably for you when you first saw the light. But that, you always saw that picture. I mean, granted, it was Han Solo with his gun, pointing his gun, but you had Chewie with the bowcaster.
Yeah.
Chewie's in the exact same pose, yeah. And it just blew my mind.
Yeah,
my head explode.
Head explode.
Yeah.
Yes. I just had to not too much to get into it because I mean, what is there to say? But I mean, it was an awesome trailer, and you know, for the little Star Wars that I've been seeing and trying to keep up when they release trailers and the little things Abrams drops, that is gold, Jerry. It's gold.
Well, I never thought I would see it. Like when I saw the. When I saw Sith, I was in Colorado, so I was all by myself because my family was out of town, and Sith happened to be that day, so that was like the first movie I ever saw by myself.
By yourself, yeah.
Yeah. And which I swore I would never do was to watch a movie by myself, but I remember watching the Sith and like that the opening credits going like, man, this is the last time I'm going to see like the new Star Wars film. So yeah. I'm trying not to get too amped up about it, or I wasn't trying to, but...
It's difficult.
With this day and age, with it hitting Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Vine. It's good.
Yeah. I think from what I've seen so far, I mean, I just think he's doing a really good job kind of taking it back to the essence, like...
to the essence.
The essence of what it was, you know, not, like, the CGI and stuff, like, you know, I understood why they would go with that when they went with the prequels and whatnot, but, you know, it lost quite a bit, and I think Abrams really understands,
let's break it down then, right?
All right.
Phantom Menace, did you like it?
No.
You didn't like Phantom Menace?
I liked it when I first saw it. Just because, I mean, it was Star Wars and it was like a, you know, it was like the first time since we were probably like 10 years old or, you know, maybe like, yeah, probably about 10 years old where we got like new, like actual canon, like Star Wars, like information. Overall, like, I mean, Jake Lloyd was just so bad as Anakin, like it really kind of hurt the movie. Binks really hurt the movie. There was some good stuff in there in terms of like storyline and like understanding what was going on. But
your boy Liam Neeson talking on the phone.
that would have been great if I could have seen a couple more throat punches. But Liam getting killed. I mean, you know, Maul was awesome in that movie. And then they really the thing that was cool about that movie was really like the final like Sith v Jedi scene, where it's like, you know, in the original Star Wars movies, you know, as good as they were story-wise, you know, the sword fighting was pretty robotic and pretty slow-paced, but that was, like, a really good lightsaber duel and kind of showed, kind of was taking it back to, like, when Jedi and Sith were in their prime, right? And so that was the thing that kind of stuck with me. As the movie was, like, I could always watch that final scene.
I'm going to say this right now. I like The Phantom Menace. Granted, what you set aside with Jake Lloyd and Jar Jar Binks, but... watching the overall movie, it's like a fun movie. Like, it didn't have to, like, I know Star Wars fans wanted something more epic, but for me, if you just sit there and just enjoy the movie, it's a very enjoyable movie. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go on record saying that I did like that movie. But yet there are some flaws in it. But the main thing with me is that, like, it's kind of funny because my godson and your oldest son grew up as a kid, probably about the same age that we grew up watching Star Wars. And Jedis were the thing. I mean, like, Jedi, like, everybody wanted to be a Jedi. And it was funny how your son really took to the clone troopers. And I was like, why are you playing with clone troopers for, dude? You know, like, yeah. you have all these flipping Jedis here. Like, we had to play with Luke Skywalker as, like, the main Jedi, you know? Like, you know, and
with his little Rudy Poo lightsaber pushing through his forearm.
That's what I'm saying, dude. And, and even though Obi-Wan Kenobi, the old Obi-Wan Kenobi is my favorite guy, like, my favorite character pretty much, he didn't do too well during, you know, when you were playing with him as a Jedi. But what I liked about that movie was that you knew Jedis, you know, kicked ass, right? Like, Jedis always kicked ass, and this is the first time you actually saw it on screen where they were like the best fighters and stuff. So that's why I liked the movie. Now, you asked me about Clone Wars.
I know you hate Clone Wars.
I cannot stand. I think Clone Wars is one of the worst movies ever. There's some good scenes. I mean, like Yoda fighting and stuff. That's a good scene. But the dialogue is just so terrible in that movie. I mean, like every time Obi-Wan first of all, they make Obi-Wan a punk in that movie. You know, he's like it's kind of like a. There was kind of like this comic book where it was an Image comic book, and it was like this team, and there was this one character called Kato, and he always got his ass kicked. And, you know, like whenever he fought, he always got his ass kicked. Well, that's how Obi-Wan was. Like, Obi-Wan just gets his ass kicked in that whole movie. You're going like, what the hell are they doing, Obi-Wan, dude? And so, but everything that comes out of Obi-Wan's mouth when he's talking to Anakin is like, my very young apprentice, or my very stupid apprentice, or you little bitch-ass kid, you suck, and you know, you can't hold a candle to me, apprentice, and stuff. It was just a bad movie. Now, Revenge of the Sith.
You're asking me now?
Yeah.
Okay, you didn't ask me about Phantom Menace, but...
You didn't like Phantom Menace, right?
I like Phantom Menace, all right.
Okay, so you like it the way I like the... not yeah, Phantom Menace.
It's
Attack of the Clones, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'd say, overall, I think the movie's pretty decent. Definitely, like, the supposed love story of Anakin and Amidala just kills it, I'm not trying to blame Obi-Wan in that movie. It's like trying to act against Anakin and what Padme Amidala was doing. You know, Portman's a really good actress, but she was terrible in that movie, and I don't even blame her as much as
it's the way the script is written.
It's written bad, and Hayden Christensen is to steal one from Jim Rome. He's wooden and laconic. So it's pretty bad. And
was his mouth a gate too?
yeah, and he had the eyes of a goat. But I mean, and I'll go like what you did in the last. I think the story is decent. Like it moves along what it's supposed to be. Well, it's just, I mean, like trying to get you to actually care about the love story going on between Anakin and Amidala is ridiculously hard because like they're so unbelievable. And I'll leave it at that.
So I mean, then, so Samuel Jackson came through in that movie.
Yes,
so
no, he did.
Yeah, he did.
That's
yeah.
why there's good things in that movie.
Yeah.
But that those two just kill it. So, all right, Return of the Sith.
Was it Return of the or Revenge of the Sith?
Revenge of the Sith.
I think it's Return of the Jedi, Revenge of the Sith.
Okay.
Yeah.
My bad.
Come on,
I'm only 5 years in, dude. Give me a fucking break.
5 years. That's like an accomplishment for you or something. Revenge of the Sith, I liked it.
Yeah.
All I can really say is that I like that. I like the opening. You know, you had that big space fight in the beginning. Count Dooku dies real fast. Some people are going like, "Well, how can you have like Count Dooku be like this major character and he dies that fast?" But I really like the swordplay in that one. It was kind of slow here and there, but I think it was slow in the right way. The last fight, it's okay. It's nothing great, nothing special, but. My favorite part of that movie is when Anakin decides to turn dark, right? He joins the dark side. And they show Amidala, and she just, like, kind of just stand there looking at, like, the Jedi temple, like, just burned to the ground and stuff or anything. It's just, like, there's no words. It's hardly anything. It's just, like, really, like, the music is done just right, and the pacing was done really well. And I remember going, like, wow, after all these years, George Lucas learned how to make a movie again. So I really liked it. And it's probably the one that I watched the most out of the three. But, you know, Phantom Menace, if I just want to kind of just dumb down, I'll watch Phantom Menace. If I want to get pissed off and throw my remote at the TV, I watch Attack of the Clones. And, you know, Sith is a good movie. I liked it.
Yeah, again, some of the scenes between Amidala and Anakin, like really Amidala... The part where she's giving birth and talking about and the robots talking about how she died of a broken heart is really, really bad. But like actually, like I think that movie really works for Hayden Christensen because once he goes dark and he becomes Vader, like he's supposed to be just completely emotionless guy, and like he's actually like his terrible style of acting like works for playing that type of Vader.
Yeah.
It's just when he was supposed to be kind of like...
You're with me or against me or something like that.
Right.
It's like a bad wrestling
film.
If
you're not with me, you're my enemy. Yeah. So some John Cena stuff right there. I'm surprised he wasn't wearing some orange wristbands and throwing his hat into the crowd.
Well, there was a gas attendant, though. You know, like all those guys in the last scene, those were all gas attendants. Right. You know, so there's some explosions.
So very Marine-esque.
So go ahead and rank your... Top Star Wars movies, top to bottom.
I mean, Empire is always going to be number one. I think I go A New Hope 2. Three's between Jedi and Sith. You can kind of toss a coin. I mean, I'll go with Sith just because they're over time. Like, I'll go Return of the Jedi. I mean, when I was a kid, it was really good. As I got older, I realized, like, the cheesiness of the Ewoks, but it was still overall a pretty good movie. Then I'll go Sith, and then I'll go Clones, and then I'll go
Phantom Menace.
Phantom Menace, yeah.
So I'll do the exact same thing except put Phantom Menace above Sith. Yeah. I think Jedi gets the nod. I mean, when Jedi came out, we were probably like 11 or 12 or something like that. And probably like 9 or 10. And I remember when that movie came out, that blew me away because there's a lot of, I mean, you know, Luke, there's a lot of sword fighting, there's a lot of lightsabers in that one, and I really liked it, and just kind of the whole, the last scenes and stuff, and then you throw in Harrison Ford. I mean, Harrison Ford, you know.
But he was kind of a punk in that movie.
He was a punk in that movie, but still, but
he was a punk for love.
Yeah, he was calling the gangsta of love.
call me, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, and of course, when we say Empires, I mean, Empire is my favorite movie of all time, and a lot of it is because of Harrison Ford. And Harrison Ford, you know, he gets a lot of flack for some of the things that you know that he's done or that he does, but I think he's one of the most underrated guys one of the most underrated actors in a long time. I mean, granted, he was in the 90s when there were some really bad movies in the 90s that people thought were good, but...
Here's something that I would never think that I would have said in my 10, 15-year-old self. Harrison Ford is the Larry Bird of acting, okay? In his prime, he was the fucking man, and it's very hard to deny, especially if you're watching it.
That's the first time I ever heard you say Larry Bird was the man in his prime, but okay. Go ahead.
And then, like...
I'm almost afraid to stop it, but go ahead.
And then, like, once Larry Bird was towards the tail end of his career, he was, like, this broken-down guy that you kept hearing about how great he was, and you're like, I want to see it. Harrison Ford's made some fucking bad movies in the last decade plus, probably. But, like, it shouldn't take away from what he was doing in his prime. And, like, you know, I started watching basketball, like, seriously when Bird was a broken-down shell of what he was.
And who was telling you that Larry Bird was a
great player? You were, all the time. Yeah. And sadly, so was every broadcaster known to man. And I'm like, dude, this guy can barely fucking
win. Did you just compare me?
No, you were talking,
I didn't say that. I mean, at that time, I wasn't saying that he was the greatest ever.
Yeah, yeah, right. You were telling me that in his day, he was the guy. But what really killed it for me was when I was watching him play, and I'm saying, dude, this guy can barely walk. And all these guys are talking about how, like, this guy's, like, the greatest that ever did it. And that was why, that really kind of turned me against Bird, right? So,
even though I said Bird wasn't the best player of all time, I think the best player of all time, to me...
You think it's Magic.
Is Magic. I mean, the most talented player is Jordan by far. I mean, Jordan, towards the end of his career, I mean, that guy was a man, but Magic could take Michael Thompson and win a championship with Michael Thompson. And that says a lot because... everyone knows about Klay Thompson, but Michael Thompson was a stiff.
and Steph might take Klay to a title.
There we go.
But that's a whole other story.
That's a whole other story. You know, so Larry Bird was a three-time MVP, right? Harrison Ford in, you could say...
Star Wars. Indiana Jones.
Yeah, Indiana Jones, and then Blade Runner, too. I mean, a lot of people sleep on Blade Runner, but, yeah. You know, that was a good movie unto itself. So, all right, good. We done?
Yeah.
That was a nice trip down memory lane.
There he goes.
Heavy duty. Heavy duty.
You think Ben will say we went too long?
Yeah. I don't want to hear about wrestling.
I think Ben will actually appreciate that Star Wars throwdown. So.
Nah, he doesn't know nothing about Star Wars.
He ain't lying.
Those kids know nothing about Star Wars, man. Like, if you're between 39 and 45, you know about Star Wars. If you're younger than that, or 30, I'll give you 38. But if you're younger than that...
I'm 39, so I'm...
Yeah, there we go. Well, congratulations. So one thing before you roll out your crumpled piece of paper, which has made a return, I haven't seen that in a long time. I want to talk about... there's two things I want to talk about. One of them is...
Talk about them.
Is what do you think about John Cena's open challenge for the belt? And... I want you to take it into when you answer this question, take it into context when we said that Daniel Bryan was going to win the Intercontinental, what that would do for the belt, and if John Cena wins, well, we knew John Cena was going to win the U.S. belt, and what that would mean for the title. Is John Cena doing this open challenge good for the U.S. belt?
I suppose it's good for the belt. It's not necessarily, like, compelling television. Because he's just calling out guys, and they're going to come out, and, you know, they're going to get beat. But in terms of bringing some kind of prestige back to the belt, let's say, yeah, I think it is. I mean, that belt was so dead in the water, you know, it's making it relevant. I just, you know, the complaint that I have is, you know, it's not rocket science, and it's not like you have to give it to John Cena to make it so that the guy who has the U.S. belt wins. I mean, that's pretty easy to figure out. I don't know why they have to kind of take it to John Cena to make it have a belt that the guy wrestles every week and wins. But that's kind of what it's supposed to be. So that the belt is supposed to be every week it's defended on live television and the guy is a good worker and wins. Now, John Cena's not a good worker, and especially that cheesy stunner, which...
Let's not get into
it. Well, Stone Cold buried it in this podcast, yeah. which good for Stone Cold. The only thing that's missing is that, yeah, he's not this great worker, but that's what the belt is supposed to be. It's supposed to be one that's defended every week and gives the show, like, some kind of credibility.
I agree with what you're saying, but I disagree with it 100%. And the reason why is when he first started doing it, I was like, all right, you know, okay. But if you're going to, if you're, you know, you bring out Dean Ambrose has a great match. You bring out Bad News Barrett. He has a great match. The problem that I have with it is that it's not... What I foresaw with this belt was that Cena could carry it, and then he could get in a feud with someone that deserved a feud, and you could build this guy up by having him lose all the time, but have him like have really compelling matches with Cena, and when finally this guy beats Cena for the belt, this guy's made, and you kind of created another superstar. And when I see him, he's fighting a different guy every week. That's not happening. The other guy is having a great match and carrying the match, and this guy is getting all the benefits from it. I just see it, and, you know. I try to stay away from the John Cena conspiracy theories and stuff, but I just see this as something to pump his own ego and to pump up his own legacy, if I can say that. I would rather see him build up a guy and have like a long-standing feud. Now, the seeds are planted for Rusev to, you know, Rusev is still involved, but man, I don't think Rusev is that guy. I mean, you know, I think like, you know, Ambrose is the guy, or, you know, Bad News Bears guy. So that's my feeling on that. You have something to add?
Yeah, I just think, I mean, I think we can both be right on this one. Like, I think what you're saying is correct, but I don't think directly after he wins it, he can go straight into the feud with the guy that is going to be a back and forth guy. I think it's fine that he's doing open challenge and giving everybody a shot at it. I think he has to get through Rusev. I agree with you. I don't think Rusev's the guy either. But after he gets through him on the return match, gets a little more distance from when he won the title, I think that's when you start to get some more like legitimate like feud between him and some other guy going back and forth for a bit, and because he's gonna have to hold that belt for a while. If they're gonna put it on him and they're gonna make it matter, he's gonna have to hold that thing for a matter of months. So you're gonna have to have him. You know, you're not gonna get that contender that is gonna be a true challenge for him probably until 4 to 6 months down the line, and then. Then if he can do it like that, then it'll be interesting.
I hope that's the case. I mean, I hope that is a case where the open challenges stop. I mean, I do like the open challenges. Here's the thing that I don't like, and this is, and I talked about it last week, and then it happened this week again on Raw. I don't know how. I think the fans being marks for themselves sometimes really sends the wrong message. You have John Cena kick out of a bullhammer. And it wasn't like a weak bullhammer. I mean, this is like
one of the better ones he's done.
And he kicks out of this move, and people boo it. And then 20 seconds later, they're saying this is awesome. I don't understand how you have your guy from your own flipping country pull off this flipping move in his country. And I'm sitting there, I'm watching this. I'm watching him put the bullhammer on, and he does it. And granted, maybe for a half a second, I was like, Wade Barrett can win this match. You know, Wade Barrett will probably, you know, he put his finisher on, he's going to win this match. That was only for a half a second now, and then reality set in, and I realized that. But then, you know, it's, first of all, I don't like the bullhammer isn't protected. I mean, you know, is he going to kick out of the Sister Abigail next? I mean, you know, it's just, there's no, you can do so many other things with Wade Barrett. You know, you can do so many different things with that storyline. I mean, you can have Rusev come out, you know, cause an interference or do whatever it is. I just thought of it right now. You know, it's like you can have Rusev interfere and make Wade Barrett lose. And then all of a sudden, now you have your major heel, you know, to really have people, you know, boo. And maybe you have an inkling of people cheering for John Cena in that country where he's getting booed left and right. But I don't understand how you say this is awesome after you kick out of your countryman's flipping finisher and you're happy about that. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
So really quickly, I'll go and instead of Rusev getting involved, which I mean makes sense storyline wise, but I think like they're slightly touching on it, but like some kind of alliance between Sheamus and Wade, I think makes a ton of sense at this point. But the main topic that I had like all my stuff written down here on, you're kind of hitting the periphery of it was, you know, I generally. And I think a lot of people give a lot of respect to the London crowd as being this kind of like rowdy and excited crowd. I thought they came off looking like a bunch of fucking marks in that whole show. And what you're saying is part of it. I'm going to go to the paper now because I've...
You got to do the crumple reference.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Thank you. Let me get it. Cena gets this big London pop right after they're booing him. A really cheap pop. Let's see what else. like they're booing the hell out of him, and then he's doing some weak promo, and then he wrestles WrestleMania, and then they all pop. It's like, if you guys, like, some of the guys I really respect, like, that are on Twitter are, like, these English fans that are pretty kind of, like, hardcore, old-school guys, right? So, like, I think maybe mentally I got it built up that that's a lot how what the London crowd is, and I've seen them get excited for matches and stuff in the past. But this was just, like, they were popping and getting excited at all, like, the wrong times, considering what they... If you're going to come out and boo the hell out of John Cena, you're going to pop as soon as he says WrestleMania. You're going to pop when he starts beating on Wade Barrett.
You're going to pop when he kicks out of his finisher that hasn't been kicked out of.
Right. This is awesome chant was weak. Getting excited for that fucking cutter that's pretty terrible. I just thought they looked like marks all the way through. They marked out for the Fandango going back to his old music. I mean, it's just bad. And then on top of it, like, on top of coming off, like, looking like a bunch of cheesy marks, they go and when Naomi turns on Paige, they basically start chanting, I don't really want to say this, but they start chanting, "You're a N-word," at her. It was like, you know, I mean, I know, like, there's, like, a lot of racism within European soccer and things like that, but, dude, you guys look like a bunch of fucking idiots, dude. You're marking out at all the wrong times, considering what you claim that you want to see in terms of WWE, and then you're gonna go and get racist on a fucking wrestling show where she's just doing, like, what's scripted for her to do. I mean, it's just stupid.
Well, I think I think social media has really helped. It has been a boom to wrestling in general. And I'm not just talking about WWE, but I'm talking about, you know, like, ROH and stuff. And it's funny, like, a lot of people that I follow on Twitter, you know, I have a lot of, I have a very special relationship with people in London. I mean, I have a lot of followers, and I follow them in London. I really know their stuff, akin to us over here, where there's probably a lot of London people that say the exact same thing about American fans as well. But at the same time, it becomes a sheep mentality. And it's kind of funny because probably about 4 or 5 years ago, when Twitter was still kind of exclusive, I guess, you know, where you know, it's kind of like the same thing with Facebook, right? Like, when Facebook first came out, you know, there was, you know, like, you were on Facebook, you met up with all your old friends that, you know, you haven't seen in a long time, and I thought it was really good. Then your mom starts coming on. Then your aunts start coming on. And it's like, and all this stuff that you used to say on, you know, like, I was, you know, you put something on Facebook, and then your mom responds to it. And I was like, man, what the, I'm like, Mom, what are you doing, dude? You know, it's like I'm 13 years old all over again. Yeah. Like, I was, like, hitting on, like, three chicks one time, and my mom comes walking up, you know, on campus or something, because she had to meet somebody, and she, like, touched me on the chin or some shit. I'm like, man, why are you cock blocking me for, dude? So
at least you didn't bring up A is for Arab.
A is for Arab. Yeah, don't. Man, that's like the Big Show thing right there. Why you gotta? Is Andre? Does A stand for Andre? Why you gotta bring that up? But
you keep leaving the book here, man. But keeps reminding me.
But I don't know. I'm gonna bring that fucking book. So.
It'll be really bad if your mom starts listening to the podcast.
Yeah, and then
John, why are you
why are you talking that way? John Cena's the best. But then once, you know, and then once Facebook jumped the shark, and even people saying that people jumping the shark, but when once Twitter jumped the shark, it became kind of a lowest common denominator for a lot of things. And wrestling really is the lowest, to me, is like one of the lowest forms of entertainment, right? Okay. But at the same time, like, me and you have fought over, you know, people saying, like, it's, you know, everybody that used to, like, give us funny looks when we used to watch wrestling back in, like, the 80s and 90s and stuff. And we're the ones that I always watched it, even though when everybody thought it was just really bad and stuff. Like, when Hulk Hogan left WWF and you had kind of all these rigmarole of people and stuff, I was the guy that kept on watching it and I would defend it. And then it blew up in the 90s and you know, like, wow, and I was like, well, I've been saying this the whole time. And I think you're kind of getting that shift now, you know, which is like, it's highly accessible for everybody. And at the same time, it's like, I like that people are starting to watch it. But I mean, Cardboard Icons is like the perfect example of that, right? Now, I'm not saying that he's as bad as what they did in London, but, you know, when he started kind of talking about wrestling on Twitter and stuff, and, you know, like, I have a pretty good, you know, I have a decent rep on Twitter. And then he, you know, he's
600+ followers.
689 followers, yeah.
Plus,
yeah. So
covered myself on that one.
There you go. But then but he sends out a tweet saying like, new day. Like I'm supposed to respond to that and be happy about that. It's like, dude, I'm not a fucking mark, dude. I don't do that shit. So, but I think that's the case. And when you start getting crowds that want to make a name for themselves and they try to be like that New Jersey crowd. That's a one-time deal. That's never going to happen again.
Well, part of what made the New Jersey crowd good was because they weren't marks. Like, they were just cheering for the stuff that they wanted to cheer. Now it feels like you got these crowds that are, watching and figuring out, well, what am I supposed to cheer for? Oh, we're supposed to boo Roman Reigns? All right, let's boo Roman Reigns. Oh, we're supposed to cheer Daniel Bryan? Let's cheer Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
It's not anything like what that Jersey crowd was 2 years ago.
Well, you take that WrestleMania crowd, right? And everybody's booing Roman Reigns. I mean, we're not booing Roman Reigns, and they were cheering. I mean, it was a pretty decent crowd.
I thought the Mania crowd was good.
Yeah, I mean, we weren't trying to make a name for ourselves. I mean, The Rock did his stuff, and it was like stuff that we've seen all before. But I mean, I never chant in during the crowd. But when you said millions, and we all said "and millions," because. It was The Rock, and it was like, we get to see The Rock go through his whole list of all that stuff. So, it's there's certain pockets here and there that are still there. But I mean, at the same time, it's like, we don't agree with people booing Roman Reigns. I think even the Roman Reigns promo, he was kind of talking back to him and stuff and everything as well.
I thought he did a really good job.
I thought he did a good job too.
Like, because the crowd wanted to go against him, and this one. Could fall into that London crowd, fall into the mark category again, but I thought he kind of turned the crowd towards his favor through the promo. So, I mean, I thought he did well. I think he's been doing well. So, it's kind of hard to judge whether it was the crowd being marks or whether he really turned him towards his favor, but I thought he did a really good job in the promo.
I mean, here's my biggest thing with the whole thing with Naomi, right? I mean, wrestling... When it was really big in the South, right? I mean, we're talking about the South here. We're talking about the Carolinas. We're talking about Georgia. We're talking about Louisiana and stuff. I mean, major, major racial tension, But there was never a chant that everybody could hear on TV, saying a derogatory name. I mean, you watch it for what it is. I mean, give me a break. If you're just trying to, like, make a name for yourself and you're trying to get a pop somewhere, if you're trying to make your own self pop as a crowd or whatever like that, and you have to kind of reevaluate what why you're there.
I don't think that was even them trying to make a name for themselves. I think that was like that element that you get at like European, like high profile international soccer, where they still have a lot of deep seated like racial tension over in Europe. I think that was that coming through, because it wasn't like when I read about it on Twitter, I was like, damn, like was that like the pervasive chant when I heard it, like. It wasn't. You had to really look for it. If I wasn't on the West Coast delay and I didn't know it was coming, I don't even know if I would have caught it.
I didn't even catch it. I mean, this is the first I've heard of it.
Right, but I read about it on Twitter before I caught up and started watching the show, and so I was looking for it, and because I was looking for it, I found it. So it wasn't like it was like the dominant chant by any means, but just the fact that it was enough of an element in that crowd that wanted to. Go in that direction. It's pretty disgusting, especially in 2015. It's like, you're saying Mid-South, 1980s, 1970s. I mean, it was a different world, right? But at this point, like...
But see, that even lends to the fact even more, where they didn't... I mean, I knew there was wrestling fans over there that felt that way.
Yeah.
But they've never put it out there on TV. And I don't know which is worse or better, but...
Right.
The whole thing is like, this is, I mean, I feel like I'm just the Buddy Ventura over here. Like, this is sports entertainment, it's entertainment.
Yeah.
And if you have to go there.
I don't want to cut you off, right? But like, if you're
people that say that they don't want to cut you off, they're going
to
cut you off.
Right.
Go
no,
ahead.
I'm going to. I'm just saying I didn't want to do it.
I didn't want to do it, but I'm going to.
You're trying to express yourself as like an intelligent crowd by like cheering when you want to cheer and booing when you want to boo. And then you go in and start making statements like that. Like, you make yourself look like a bunch of fucking morons, right? You come off looking really dumb. And it's going to be hard for you to, like, put this idea out there that you're a evolved and intelligent wrestling crowd when you're going to resort yourself to that.
Here's the thing that I want to bury Horowitz herself on, and that means pat on the back. Cardboard icons. That means I'm going to pat ourselves on the back right now. That's a Barry Horowitz.
Why don't you Arn Anderson this right here, and don't blow your own horn, but
two. Us being minorities and being a mix of minorities, we've had to deal with a lot of racism in our life, and the whole thing is that we don't come out and say, you know, because there are minorities that come out there and say, oh, because I'm this, you know, this, why is this, you know, here's a perfect case, right? Everything's coming out now about police brutality, this, that, and this, and people are getting shot and stuff. And I'm not saying that's right. You know, I'm not saying it's right. But here's, and you, my daughter's asked me about this, like, why is this happening and this, that, and this? I said, listen, man, if a police officer tells you to stop, you stop. You don't run. I mean, that's just the way it is. It's like, I don't care what it is. If a police officer tells you to flip and stop, you stop. You don't run. And the reason why is because when I was growing up, I've been in about four or five situations where I've had police stop me or tell me to come over to them, you know, because I fit a description. I had to get patted down and do all that stuff. It's like, yes, sir, officer, whatever you need. And the one time that I didn't do that, I was detained for 50 minutes outside of a nightclub on your birthday, your 21st birthday, and you know, and I learned a valuable lesson back then. I mean, I almost got you know, when you say hauled off to the slammer, I almost got hauled off to the slammer, and I had no clue how to get out because I was by myself in San Jose, all by myself. I didn't have my parents around or anything like that, and that's just kind of like the whole thing is like, we don't speak about race. You know, it doesn't rule our lives, but we have a very special insight to what it is to be was it prejudice? See, I don't even think about it anymore. But to be prejudiced against what's what I'm looking for? Like, people treat us a certain way because of the color of our skin, and they think what we are. But what you just said, I mean, you're brought up the right way, and the guy for me that will not stand for racism under any circumstances is your dad. And your dad is like from Iowa, you know, like straight corn fed Iowa white guy, right? But this guy does not stand for racial injustice whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, people that do that, they just don't get it. Mm-hmm. You're right. I mean, everything that they're trying to do, and I didn't even know about it, but you know, it's just a dumb situation. It doesn't make any sense. And, it's just a waste of time. So, bad crowd. Bad crowd.
Yeah, I just think it's kind of sad because in my mind now I think the London crowd is supposed to be this really good crowd, right? I thought, you know, like it's supposed to be almost an extension of the Raw after WrestleMania crowd. Like we said, the New Jersey crowd was good. I thought the San Jose crowd after WrestleMania this year was awesome. I thought they did a really good job, and I'm expecting that kind of thing out of the London crowd. And just the London crowd was, like, really disappointing to me. It's, like, started off the way I thought it should, you know, had a lot of good energy, but just completely clueless at what they were going to start supporting and what they were going to start booing against.
Well, is there a shift? So, I mean, are we just two older guys that don't get it anymore, that we're out of touch with the younger generation? I mean, or is it just, is there a shift now in what the wrestling fan is?
No, because Fandango is a perfect example, right? Fandango is a character that's got nothing going on. He's dead in the water. He's going nowhere, right? And the only reason why that guy even got any sort of push whatsoever was because the New Jersey crowd, like doing the little that song, right? So he's been going absolutely nowhere. Like, that thing was hot for about a month, maybe 2 months. And he's been...
I wouldn't even say that. Probably like a week.
That was during depending on the town.
That was during that whole time with the what was that one, the something shuffle, or what was that,
the Harlem Shake?
Yeah, the Harlem Shake when that went viral.
Right.
And they were trying to make Fandango go viral at the same time.
Right. And I'm saying, like, it had legs for a couple of months in various cities. Okay. And then ever since then, it's just a floundering character that they don't know what to do with, right? So now, because I think they knew that New Jersey crowd had a bunch of Europeans in it, they're gonna dust off this Fandango song again, and they ate it up, right? They ate it up like a bowl of soup. Okay, but what does that tell WWE? tells them, wait.
Like a bowl of bangers and mash.
Yes, there you go.
There we go. So if they're going to say the N-word, then we can throw it right back at them.
All right. So now it's going to tell them, oh, well, maybe there's still a market for this. Maybe we should try to give this a second chance. I mean, that's the only outcome that can come out of it. If they, you know, they see that, I don't think that they like Fandango. I don't think they think Fandango's any good. I think they really didn't support him during the match, but then all of a sudden they play that song, and all of a sudden everyone's dancing. And
but I don't think that's just a London thing. I think if you do that anywhere, I think everybody, I mean, maybe not in New Jersey, maybe not in Philadelphia, but I think if you do that in 93% of venues, they're going to do it.
I don't.
I do, because, I mean, you bring up Fandango as a perfect example, and I agree with you, but it's the exact same thing with the Cena match. I mean, that's a perfect example of itself as well. You know, it's like you have your hometown guy. He cuts a great promo before that match. He's like, I didn't even do anything yet. You know, and, you know, it's everything is going good, everything's going good. He throws that bullhammer down, and then they kick out, and then 25 seconds later, they're saying, this is awesome. I don't think it's just specific to London. I mean, I think it's just it's the overall kind of short-sightedness of fans sometimes.
You know, I'm not saying.
I mean, it happened with the Royal Rumble. I mean, the Royal Rumble, that exact same sheep mentality, like cancel the WWE Network. I'm just like, come on, man.
Yeah, I'm not saying London's the only town it would happen in, but I don't think. Yeah, there's selected towns that it's going to happen in, and those are like the towns that are like the hardcore mark cities, right? And that's what I'm saying, basically. I thought London was better than that. That's the point I'm trying to make. I'm not saying that they're the only ones that would do that. So but that's the kind of town.
Out of the five towns where Fandango would try to do this and they boom off the stage, you thought London was going to be one of them, and it didn't turn out to be that way.
Right.
Okay. So we do agree on that.
Then. Yeah. And Fandango was only a small part of it. I agree with what you're saying. The stuff with the Cena promos and the match with him and Wade Barrett. I was just shocked. That's why I started writing. I just couldn't believe. Like, I wanted to make sure.
Did you throw your keys down?
No, the keys were hanging already. I just wanted to make sure I got to that because I just thought it was really weak.
Can I just turn this? Can I just ask you a question here?
Go ahead.
Can you believe that Seth Rollins is a champion? I mean, can we just end it off with that? And like, Seth Rollins is our WWE champion, and we never really gave it the accolades that it deserved to be. This guy is the champion, and he is doing he's killing it right now.
Yeah, I can absolutely believe it. I think the only question was who is going to be the first guy from the Shield to get it, right?
Yeah,
and I'm not really shocked that it was Seth. So there's no surprise there. I'm glad.
But it's funny. I was going through the archives, listening to some stuff that we've done in the past.
I was the first guy on Seth.
No. It wasn't that. It was we're talking about, you know, Daniel Bryan coming back, people coming back from injury, and you throw him in with Kane. And here we are again. It's like Seth Rollins, and it looks like there might be a program with Kane. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, you know, and you were just ripping, like you said, Kane had no value whatsoever. He shouldn't be the first guy that a champion faces, and it looks like they're starting to do it again.
Even if he's the first guy and they move on, I got no problem with it. But if they go into an extended program with Seth Rollins and Kane, then that's going to be a problem.
Do you think that Seth Rollins can have a better match with Kane than Daniel Bryan can have a match with Kane?
I think there's more sustainability in the matches that Seth Rollins can have with Kane. I think he's just a little bit. I think he's more creative in the ring than Daniel Bryan is, and I think he's also.
Can you say that one more time?
That Seth Rollins is more creative in the ring than Daniel Bryan?
Yeah.
Yeah, do you want me to say it one more?
Say it one more time, because the people need to know.
Seth Rollins is more creative in the ring than Daniel Bryan. The other thing, too, I think, this even shocked me, and it goes back to that triple threat match with Brock Lesnar and Seth. Like, Seth really proved to me in that match that he can go against a big opponent and not be disadvantaged at all. So I would actually think that there could be some interest in him against Kane, and that he's not going to. I mean, I know physically he looks like the underdog, but he's good at wrestling against guys that are much bigger than him physically.
Is this the first champion since CM Punk where he can have a good match with anybody? I mean, look, he's had a match with Neville, and the reason why I didn't like the Neville match is because I don't like Neville.
I thought it was a good match.
Yeah, I mean, it's
and the Dolph match was a pretty good match.
Yeah, so I mean, is he one of the first champion in about 3 years where he can have a match with anybody and come out looking good, whether it's a guy low on the card or high on the card?
It's definitely the first time since CM Punk was champion that the best worker in the company was the world champion. So in that sense,
you're saying that over when Daniel Bryan was hot as all hell and he became champion.
Yeah, because that didn't last.
Yeah,
it didn't last very long.
And then I think Daniel Bryan got in the trap of getting a shit.
Well, and also again, as we've been saying all the way through, I thought by the time they put the belt on Bryan, it was already the crescendo of his momentum was already on the downside. So yeah, I think it's the first time since CM Punk, and then, you know, go back past CM Punk. When's the last time the best worker in the company was a champion? Maybe you argue Edge. Maybe.
Edge was a great worker.
No, he's a great worker.
And what I like about Seth is that he's improving on the mic every single time. Now I will tell you, if Brock wrestled maybe twice a month or whatever, we would be singing a different tune, because I think, I mean, I bought money in Brock's real estate. You know, I mean, if, you know, I'm going to buy a house with Brock Lesnar. You know, he's going to sell me a house. I mean, I think that guy, his matches, they are the same, but he's so physically imposing that he puts on a great match. And I'm on the edge of my seat with the Brock Lesnar match. And that proved that in WrestleMania. Even before Seth came out, I was sitting there going like, well, I've seen this match before, but it's, goddamn, it's good, you know?
It's because he's so physical, and the thing that really I like is he's just so technically sound. It's not like a John Cena match where, yeah, I know John Cena is stronger than 80% of the roster, but I know that John Cena, you know, couldn't wrestle his way out of a wet paper bag, and for him to keep getting all these reversals off of guys.
Wrestle his way out of a wet paper bag. I like that.
Old school, baby, old school.
Smooth. Yeah. Just like Doc.
Yeah, like every time he has like a high impact move, it's because his opponent puts himself in some ridiculous position, right? Like Brock Lesnar, you know, I don't want to go with the other old throwback, no wasted motion, but Brock Lesnar has no wasted motion. Like he can make a reversal look seamless and get right back into whatever suplex he wants to get it into, and there's no suspension of belief involved. You know, Brock Lesnar could do that to somebody. And that's what makes Brock Lesnar good, the physicality and the technical ability.
So getting back on Seth, so not only do I think this guy is good in the ring, but if he's the opening guy, if he's the opening segment, I'm starting to watch that opening segment now.
Yeah, so much better. Yeah. So much better than...
Because his mic skills
are so much better than Triple H has ever been.
Yeah, well, not just, but I mean, it's kind of like the same thing with like CM Punk. Like CM Punk was the best worker, he was the best guy on the mic. I really think now that Seth Rollins, to me, even though Seth Rollins is following, it's a script, you know, and that's because he's young and stuff and everything like that. But as young as this guy, as green as he is in terms of how the business works and in terms of how to like cut a promo and stuff, and he doesn't really have any backstage pull with whatever it is, the seeds are there. I mean, Seth, you know, it's funny, like, you know, we bring up cardboard icons again, like, that's, you know,
that's the guy he gravitated to.
And yeah, and it's
and
a
rightfully so.
Yeah, it's a natural gravitation, yeah. You know, and it's like if you're going to be a fan of Seth Rollins and gravitate towards that guy, that says a lot. And he can bring in a lot of people that normally weren't there. And you know, it's good. I mean, he's good in the ring, and I think now he's the best guy on the mic as well.
Yeah. I just, you know, I'm curious to see where this thing goes. I would love to see if at some point you get a Seth Rollins Dolph Ziggler feud. I think that could be like a ton of money, dude. I think you haven't had a small versus a small that were just straight up skill guys that could both talk, could both cut a promo, could both do like power, high fly, technical. I haven't seen it in a long time, and the build is there for Dolph. Like the momentum, the slow build, and then a couple steps back, and then. It's all there.
They're the new version. I think they're the new and improved version of Bret Hart and Mr. Perfect. And you can even say Macho and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. You know, those and you can I think Edge had some matches with who did Edge have matches with that were like high end like that as well.
I mean, I think Edge is, well, he had a lot of good bouts with Orton, but I always think of him as like the main foil to John Cena. But you know, Edge had good matches with everybody.
Yeah,
Hardy's quite a bit of matches with the Hardys and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, yeah. I mean that's where your money is, and I think at the same time, I think you know if he starts something again with Ambrose, I mean, I think that would be good.
Yeah.
And then you know what I really want to see is let's have him go against Roman Reigns and let's see if he can bring out Roman Reigns, and let's see if he can show. If he can show the wrestling marks, how valuable a Roman Reigns can be. Now, Roman Reigns is limited. I mean, but not limited in the way that people say he is. I mean, he's power based. But if you give this guy a chance, you know, and he works with the right guy, I think he could take off as well.
Yeah, I mean, you're really hampering him with if all you're ever going to do is let this guy fight the
Big Show
every fucking week for month after month, and that. I mean, he does as good a job as he can do, and Big Show is doing the best job that he can do. Big Show is more valuable, like on the promos, like going against Roman Reigns, than he is in the ring.
Well, let's talk about the Big Show,
all right.
because about 2-3 years ago, I thought he did his best in ring work, but I felt his promos were well. I mean, him as a heel, I liked him as a heel, and then he kind of did the whole contract and he started crying again and stuff. But over the past, I mean. Is there a guy that is more valuable as a foil or more valuable as someone that extends a storyline or opens up a new storyline as the Big Show right now? I mean, how do you feel about the guy?
I don't really like it as a guy that extends for too long, right? It's like, if you can go up and put a match against Big Show and beat Big Show, yeah, automatically it makes you legit. But they're going to the well on this Roman Reigns thing way too often. When they don't know what to do, they're just like, we'll just keep fighting Big Show. They did the same thing with Del Rio. Like, Del Rio got a great rub off of some of the victories he had when he was world champion against Big Show. But then they just kept doing it again and again and again. So I think there's a definite shelf life to how long you can trot that horse out there.
Well, what do you think now, though, with, I mean, because you will agree with me that he has improved on the mic.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Like, he, that whole thing about, like, the whole build with Kane about, like, whether he should lay down. Like, Big Show had the best segment with him by far, right? The whole, like, I understand, like, but, you know, you got to do, wasn't even cheesy when he dropped the best for business. Like, it came off very authentic. And I thought, yeah, I think he's doing a great job, like, extending stories. But oddly enough, I think he's doing more for the storylines on the mic than he is in the ring at this point. But I just think, yeah, you can't just keep having Roman Reigns fight Big Show week after week, twice a week, every week, again, twice. It's just, it's like, if you have something invested in Roman Reigns and you want to move this guy forward, you got to do something with him. And it can't be beat Big Show every week, beat Big Show. Oh, now we're going to have the authority interfere, and then Big Show's going to take a cheap shot on him out on the, you know, on the floor. So now, next week, we have to go Roman Reigns and Big Show again to resolve it for the fifth time.
Yeah, and see, that's the one part I didn't like about that show. I thought that was very, very staid, very, very, just very bland. I mean, it's just the execution of it was really bad. Roman Reigns looking down to make sure he's in the right spot for that choke slam and stuff. I thought that was done 15 years ago with him and The Rock. You know what I mean? So who should Roman Reigns face then? I mean, who does Roman Reigns need to face besides the Big Show to kind of make him relevant again?
I think it's too early to go straight into Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins, but that's kind of looming out there. I would think Wade Barrett would make some sense as a guy. Sheamus would make some sense as a guy. Once you get past the whole John Cena deal, I think Rusev can make some sense as someone for him to go against. I mean, there's a ton of guys, and I think that you start getting into the more athletic guys, you know, still power guys, but, you know, guys that have a little bit more athleticism and can do something. I think it'll open up what Roman Reigns can do. Like, people are harping on, like, Roman Reigns has 5 moves. Well, how many moves do you think you can pull off when you're going against a 450-pound guy, right?
Yeah, and you can't even do those full 5 moves. Right. He has to do, like, 3.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I thought he had showed a ton of growth leading into Mania when he was fighting other guys He had really opened up his moveset, and anyone that was still like that was still talking about five moves, they were way off base. You know, he had probably in that range of like 8 to 10 really solid moves, and he wasn't doing the same match every time. Like he'd do that reverse power bomb sometimes. He came up with a couple other, I can't remember now because it's been so long that they've actually let him do that, because within the last 3 weeks all he's been doing is fighting the show. But he came up with a bunch of pretty great creative moves, and you're just limiting the guy. If all you're ever going to let him do is fight show and then mix in Kane every once in a while.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go. I really I don't know if it was this Raw or it might have been SmackDown, but Cesaro and Kid's work, the matches that he had, the match with New Day. Did we already talk about that? So that match. So yeah, we talked about New Day last week. I thought what New Day did with SmackDown, or maybe it was Raw, mixing two up. I think what they're doing now is starting to work.
Trying to turn.
Yeah, like just with everybody booing them and stuff, and they don't understand why and stuff. Now I'm interested. Now my interest is peaked with them. And then they turn around and they have a match with Cesaro and Kid, and I thought that was one of the better tag matches I've seen. I mean, this whole time we've had tag teams, you know, it was just been the Usos and everybody else. Kid and Cesaro to me have quickly become one of my favorite segments on the show, and I think they're just doing great match after great match. I think the Raw one was a singles match.
Well, there was a singles match that they beat. They got disqualified against Orton, and they turned it into a handicap.
Yeah.
Is that the one you're talking about?
I'm talking about that one, but I'm actually talking about the one with New Day. I thought that
New Day. I think that was SmackDown.
SmackDown, yeah, and that was a very. I mean, I thought I really liked that match a lot. And then I don't know.
I thought the story was good in that match. Right? It was nothing. I mean, it was a pretty good match to watch. It was nothing like earth shattering, but like the whole realization, like and really. Like the barometer for that team is Kofi Kingston, right? It's like Kofi Kingston is perhaps next to John Cena the most stale character in WWE to date, and you can actually see like an element of storytelling with Kofi with this realization like what these people don't love me, what's happened, right? Like Big E, you know, I've seen him be a heel, I've seen him be a face in a short time. I know he can go in either direction, but Kofi's a guy that I just don't imagine ever being a heel. Don't imagine he'd be particularly good at it. But with him kind of trying to come to this realization, you know, how is it that these people aren't cheering me? What have I ever done to not get cheered for these guys? And that's where I think it could get interesting, right? I mean, Xavier Woods, his character hasn't been explored deep enough. Like, if he were to go heel, it wouldn't shock me because he's never really stood for anything. Big E, like I said, he's gone both directions. But Kofi has been this mainstay baby face for so long. So if you can get to the point where, you know, he feels that, you know, he feels he's justified to turn against the fans, and if he can do it correctly, then I think that'd be a big step for his character.
I really like that match because New Day got their stuff in. I mean, Big E throws Kofi over the top rope and stuff. Great spot. Cesaro gets to do his airplane spin, and then of course, I mean, I really like how Kid comes in and does a dropkick. I thought that was really good, and then the end of that match was to me was just like it was textbook, just like old school textbook. Cesaro gives him the hammer, and then Kid does a crazy credenza. I mean, I think that credenza, I don't think he gets credit for that credenza that he does, but I really enjoyed that, and I'm glad to see that there's a new day in tag team wrestling.
Right.
On the heels of that, Lucha Dragons, Raw. Don't tell me I like that match, man. Don't tell me you didn't like that match.
I did, but that's not the tag team I want to get into with you specifically.
Okay.
So yeah, I think real quickly, I think the Lucha Dragons are doing pretty well. They're becoming a team that's interesting to watch. So yeah, no problem with them. But what I really thought like stood out to me in terms of what the tag team division was the Primetime Players promo. I thought their promo was really good on the Matadors. I figured you would particularly like it because they exposed the Matadors as Puerto Ricans.
Yeah.
But like I thought like Titus has come a long way in his promos. He really led that promo. Darren kind of like piggybacked off him a couple of times. But I mean they had a point, you know, they ran down a couple of the other tag teams. I thought they were pretty. He was pretty funny. He was smooth with the whole delivery. I thought the primetime players were showing pretty well. And if you're starting, if they're going with the old school method of you have a bunch of like canned promos before you start giving a push to another tag team, I think the primetime players are. I think they're ready to blow up, man.
Yeah. No. I mean, Titus. I don't think Titus has improved on the mic. I mean, he's always had it.
I don't think he was always. It's like you used to say about Dr. Dre, right? He was just clumsy on the microphone. But I think
what?
Come on now.
Me?
Yeah. But I think
been there. I've done that.
You got guns. I got straps. I thought Titus came off really well. I thought he led that promo and was a good promo. The zings that he had in there worked and. Like, it had a purpose, and I want to see if they can now get put in some matches. Like, that's the perfect team for them, Matadors, right? It's like, you know, like, if someone's going to get a push between those two teams, it's going to be the primetime players. So give them some kind of buzz, let them come in, beat up on the Matadors, and get themselves going on a direction to maybe get, like, in the tag team title
picture. Well, I mean, they've been taking digs at New Day. They, you know, they did another one with Ascension. This one, I was kind of like, okay, you know, like, you're running through. I was like the genius, you know, like, you know, Demolition, I'm not impressed. It wasn't for Mr. Fuji, too, couldn't get dressed. I mean, it was fine. It's been well stated that I'm a big Tyson Neal fan. And I actually think that is a, just like Cesaro and Kid are, I think that formula, they have a bunch of teams that are like that, right? Like, you have the Matadors that... They're interchangeable. Like, one's not different from the other. Mm-hmm. The reason why I like the Lucha Dragons is that you have two luchadors, you know, technically two luchadors, but there's two totally,
different styles.
Yeah, different styles. And that young guy, man, I mean, the last, like...
Callisto.
The last... Well, not so much my boy, but, I mean, the last 30 seconds of that match, he's doing all this stuff. I mean, he's doing, like, video game moves and mm-hmm. stuff. And the whole thing is that it's not contrived, you know. The guy that he's doing him against, he doesn't have to like lift, you know, jump up to get it done. You know, I mean, like this guy's like, there are a lot of striking moves that he does and stuff. I thought it was done really. You know, I'm not a big fan of the whole handspring into the ropes and then come back and stuff. I'm not a big fan of that, but Callisto can pull it off. I really like that spinning elbow that he does. I mean, that's a work of art. And then that finish was just a great finish. What I want to say with this, though, is that you, in Titus O'Neil, you have a tweener power guy. You know, like, he's all power, but he brings other stuff to the table. I mean, the guy's a powerhouse. I don't think people realize how much of a powerhouse he can be. But I think Darren Young is a really good, a solid worker. You know, so you have the worker and the power element, which we haven't seen since the 80s. And it's not just limited to them. I mean, you know, Kid and Cesaro are kind of the same, but I think Cesaro's more technical, of course.
Yeah,
so, I mean, so you kind of, he's a tweener. If you have a tweener power guy with Titus O'Neil that has a power moveset, you have a tweener technical power guy with Cesaro. So, I mean, that works really well. The Usos, for the most part, I still think they're the best tag team out there, but one really doesn't differentiate.
Yeah, they're still interchangeable. Yeah,
exactly. And so it's nice to kind of see the whole kind of tag team dynamic of having, like, your power guy, having your worker, kind of in the mold of the Hart Foundation and the British Bulldogs. And, you know, so it's the tag team division, for the first time since we've done this podcast, instead of me hoping that it's going to be good, I think it's great right now. And it's WWE's, you know, it's for them to mess up.
Yeah. I wouldn't say for the first time. I think we got a really good run of tag team wrestling at that time when
you had the Road Scholars and stuff and everything.
When Kane and Daniel Bryan were hot, that was a really good time, I thought, in tag team wrestling. And then there's been a little bit of a lull, but, yeah, it looks like they're putting all the pieces in place.
See, the only difference, and I don't want to cut you off, but I do want to cut you off. That's why I'm cutting you off. The thing with the only problem I had with the Daniel Bryan and Kane one was that you had two big stars at that time that came together. So that was the only flaw that I had with that tag team division at that time, was that you had two big stars that came together and they run roughshod over everybody.
But
it wasn't organic as it is now.
Yeah, but I thought what it did was it put their legitimate title run, put all the other teams in place as, like, guys that were hungry and scrambling to get a title chance themselves. And then once they finally beat Daniel Bryan and Kane, then you had like about like six teams that you thought were all legit that could be champions.
Well, didn't they? Who beat them? Wasn't it the New Age Outlaws that beat them? Who
beat them? I thought it was the Rhodes.
They never they never won the championship. That's the team we wanted to win, but they never won.
No. The Rhodes brothers won it. It was Sandow and Cody never won it.
Yeah, Sandow and Cody. But yeah.
The Rhodes brothers.
Cody the Shield beat them.
Okay, yeah, you're right. And then the Shield, Shield beat them. I mean, then the Rhodes boys beat them.
Yeah. And then, there's a New Age Outlaw thing for a little bit.
And there was, you had the New Age Outlaws, you had the Shield, you had the Rhodes brothers. The
Wyatt family.
Wyatt family was a tag team that was valid. Usos.
So with all those big names that you just named, I am more excited for the tag team division as it stands now than I was back then.
I think there's a potential for this division to be as good or better than that one, but I think it still has to be proven. I think that division was the best the tag division has been in 6 years easy. But this has the potential to do that too.
Do you have anything else on your crumpled list? We're already an hour in. You look at that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm ready to go into one of the segments.
Into our segments? Okay. So let's go into our golden mic. It's this depends on you whether it's a golden mic or not. I'm not going to tell you who it is.
So I got to tell you if it's golden or...
Exactly, Gene. So give us a second. This is where I cross my fingers and hope that the whole thing doesn't shut down.
I did not win this championship by jumping anybody from behind. Now, you know me a little better than that, and I cannot believe that came from your mouth. Now, Sting comes out here talking about how I have always dwelled in someone else's shadow. It's true, my father taught me a lot. It's true, Dusty Rhodes taught me a lot. But I got where I am today on my own. I have come into my own. Let me tell you something, Sting. I've got more time taping up in the dressing room than you have ring time. So let me tell you what. When you get ready for any match with me, you had better make sure you got your boots laced extra tight and you're taped up extra good. Because I'm going to bring you the match that you never expected of me because you simply don't have the experience to judge anybody. What I'm going to do is bring a match to you and prove to you why I am the United States Heavyweight Champion and will be for as long as I care to be. Sting, you tried it with the World Heavyweight Champion. You came up short. United States Heavyweight Championship is something that you will not take. I am the best at what I do. I am the master ring technician, and when it comes to brawling, I can do it better than anybody else. So you keep that in mind, and you lay in bed at night, stare at the ceiling, and think about that while you're howling at yourself and beating on your chest.
All right, so do you know who that is?
I don't. I got a guess. Is it Barry Windham?
Barry Windham, yeah.
Okay.
So what do you think?
It was a fine promo for the time that it was. I mean, it's nothing earth-shattering. And in time, that's a pretty solid promo, but kind of falls short of some of the stuff that had come later from it. But I got no problem with that promo.
You know, everybody says that Barry Windham, you know, was a guy that never got his due. You know, like, really good in the ring, which you know, you watch a match with him, especially with the stuff with WCW or, like, NWA. The, you know, early WCW, not the stuff that you saw during the Attitude Era. You watch this guy in the ring, the guy could tell a good story, and they said he was great on the mic as well. So I kind of wanted to get your take, you know, because, like, I can sit here and say, hey, you know what, like, this guy was good in the ring, he was great on the mic, you know, now listen to his promo, and that would sway you one way. You know, I don't think you have the, you know, the promos that we like, or the promos that the pinnacle of promos that were there during the Attitude Era. I don't think you had that without just these old-school selling ticket type promos.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's not a promo that's going to embarrass him by any means. I'm going to assume he's done better promos than that at different points in time. But yeah, I mean, Barry Windham's, he's legendary, man.
Yeah, probably his best promo that I heard him say was when it was before him and Luger fought Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard. To defend the title, because they beat him, and then they ran a promo right before Barry Windham turned on him, and he was just cutting like this promo. He's like, you know, like, we're the best looking guys here, like, you know, as these girls will tell you right now and stuff, and just really, he made me believe that, you know, and I've said this before, like, when I saw, you know, this is when I became like kind of like a this is when I all came went all in on the Horseman, was when Barry Windham turned and became a fourth Horseman, and he left Luger, you know, he pretty much gave, like, this great clothesline, you know, pre-Clothesline from Hell on Luger, and I was sold right then and there. But when he did that promo, I mean, I looked at these two guys and go like, oh, there's no way that Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard have a chance against these two guys. Because, like, you know, Luger was a spectacle, right? Mm-hmm. And, Barry Windham kind of looked like a, you know, he kind of looked like a bum. But
yeah, he's kind of doughy, but, yeah, like, but the guy could work.
If people didn't realize, he was like 6 foot 8,
6 foot seven,
or something,
seven,
like, yeah, something like that. 6 foot seven. Wasn't really built, but just tough as all nails. And that promo that he did, and I should have thought, I just thought of this promo now, but that promo that he cut, you know, before that match, I was like, oh man, they're going to win this. And, you know, it's going to be great. You know, it's like this is such a great team. You know, Luger's the man, and Barry Windham, I don't know who this guy is, but, you know, the guy's great on the mic, and, like, man, they're going to kill these guys. And then in that match, it's just like the first time I ever, like, marked out on a turn, and I thought it was great. So, yeah, I mean, Windham was the man, and I just kind of wanted to get your take on what you thought about that promo. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't think that promo's any great shakes.
But you saying that he's a legend, I mean, that...
Yeah, he is.
That's some high cotton right there.
It's high praise.
Yeah. So go ahead. I don't have anybody for...
I got like three possible selections. I think one I'd have to like kind of sneak through you. One I don't know if you'd even be willing to go. So I'm going to go with one.
Let's go with the one that I'm not willing to go. Let's see if you can sway me for the one I'm not willing to go on.
All right. Well, I know as an individual, I tried to sneak this guy by before.
If you say Paul Roma, we're ending this thing right now.
Well, I was going to say Power and Glory.
Power and Glory?
But I have
the team.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. Why should they be in the Hall of Kayfabe?
Well, I was pondering putting Hercules in there, and while I really was a pretty big fan of Hercules Hernandez in his time, you know, he was mostly used as this guy that was just spoiled to go against the Ultimate Warrior and other big guys. I thought like the best that his character ever developed was when he was a tag team with Paul Roma. And, you know, Paul Roma is what he is. But I thought that team, the team of those two guys, worked really well. I thought that was a really good team that had a ton of potential.
I have no problem with putting Power and Glory in that tag team. Just because, for a couple of reasons. One of them is, you have Slickster as their manager. And Slickster... I mean, the more that I keep, I mean, you've always liked Slickster. I've always liked Slickster, but the more that I'm listening, I watch these guys' promos. The guy was the man in promos, very, very underrated in promos. We have put Slickster in the past. And I'm going to say this right now: Paul Roma was so. I am famous for liking Chris Benoit, Tully Blanchard, CM Punk, Arn Anderson, guys that. I look at and go, like, I'm going to follow this guy. I'm all in on this guy. Chris Benoit was really kind of like, was like the epitome of that. Like, I saw Chris Benoit, you know, when he first kind of debuted in WCW. I'm like, man, this guy is something else. Like, this is the guy that I'm going to follow, and I'm going to be all in on this guy. Paul Roma was a precursor to that.
He was Benoit before Benoit?
Yeah, I really liked Paul Roma when, like, he was with the Young Stallions with Jim Powers. I really liked Paul Roma. Paul Roma had a great look, had some nice high spots in the ring, very athletic. I really liked Paul Roma. It wasn't until he came to WCW and joined the best faction of all time in the Four Horsemen that I was kind of looking at him going like, this just doesn't work. and then of course, you know, then he cuts the famous saying that he says Ric Flair wishes he could be me and stuff, and he puts down Arn Anderson and stuff and everything, where I just hated Paul Roma. But there was a time when I really liked Paul Roma, and to tell you the truth, I always liked Hercules. I mean, I marked out for Hercules. I mean, when Hercules, he had a face run for a while, and I would probably say he was like one of my top two or three favorite wrestlers during that time. Power and Glory was a very short-lived tag team. They did win the belts. But, you know, even, like, their finishing move, like, I think Hercules, like, did, like, his... I forget what his finisher was. It was a power-based one.
I want to say, like, he picked him up for a suplex, and Roma maybe came with a crossbody or
no,
something.
No, what it was, it was either, like a T-bone or, like, a kind of, like, a some type of suplex that Hercules did. And then Paul Roma came off the top rope for a splash. And at that time, Paul Roma had one of the best splashes in the business. I also thought he was very good with a Paul Lindorf, too. When he was with WCW, he won a belt there as well as a tag team champion. I was a huge fan of Hercules, you know, in the WWE. it's kind of sad. Like, you could kind of see, like, you know, when steroids started becoming an issue in sports in general, you'd look at Hercules and
it
go, like...
It just kind of withered away.
Yeah, well, but you look at Hercules and go, like, ah, you know, that's steroids. You know, that's a steroid body right there. Mm-hmm. And it got so bad for that guy. I mean, that guy was just, you know, he would start looking, like, towards the end, he looked really sickly. He was white as a ghost. Yeah. He had no unarmed hair, and just it was just like he shaved everything. It's just like it just doesn't look it, dude. But yeah. I was a huge fan. I liked Hercules Hernandez a lot.
Yeah, in WrestleMania 3, he had a really good match with Billy Jack King.
Yes,
and then he went on to
he made Billy Jack King.
Yeah, and then he went on to after you know I can't remember was it before or after Rick Rude and Ultimate Warrior.
It was after.
He was after.
Yeah,
he had a really good run with Ultimate Warrior. He you know when in a time when physically, you thought there was going to be no one that would be able to compete with Ultimate Warrior. He was every bit like his equal, and you know it wasn't any technical marvel, okay. But you know it was some pretty good matches.
He was entertaining, yeah.
And then he goes on and he's kind of stuck with the Heenan family, I think, for a bit. And then I think the team with him and Roma, it really breathed life back into his career. And yeah, I liked Roma on the Young Stallions, and you know I thought he had a ton of potential as well. And like you were saying earlier when we were talking about the current tag teams, I mean, when you can get a guy that's a power tweener and then a guy that's like a pretty good technician or kind of like high fly hybrid, like that's exactly what you had. And that was a combination that, you know, it could have gone for a lot longer than it did.
They were the tag team of their time. I mean, both of them had a great look. Paul Roma had a great look. Yeah. I mean, he, you know, was,
just ask him.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I brought him up anyways, but, you know, Hercules during that whole kind of Jean-Claude Van Damme 1980s, you know,
cyborg.
bulked up, bodybuilding type and stuff. I mean, that was the look back then, and they both exemplified that look, and yeah, I have no problem putting those guys in. All right, so New Japan. What'd you think of the match between Okada and AJ Styles?
I don't think it was as good as the first one. I think I'm getting spoiled. You know, it did the job. It was all right, but I don't think it was anywhere near as good, mostly for the storytelling, as the first Okada and AJ Styles match. But I thought it was still a good match.
Yeah, I think, you know, like, when I first saw Okada, I was blown away by him. I think the limitations of Okada's being shown with these matches with AJ Styles, I think Okada is a great heel. If he's, like, the heel technical guy that nobody can get over, I think that's a great character for him, but when you kind of have him as like a quasi face and stuff, and it just doesn't hold up. And the sad thing is like when AJ Styles to me is coming across better than Okada is in those matches, because Okada, you know, I don't know. There's something right now that's just kind of lacking. And I think the other problem is Nakamura. You know, like not seeing Nakamura, I'm like, ah, fuck, I got to watch an Okada match instead of watching Nakamura. So there's that problem as well. I thought it was a good match. I mean, it's what you expect from New Japan. I mean, I wasn't walking away going like, oh, you know, this match, I'm not happy with this match. I still liked the match. I thought it was really good. And I think what I got from it was that it's more setting up for something in the future with New Japan, which is more current, mm-hmm. instead of like kind of going back into the storyline there. And because what I kind of want is I really want like the storyline, you know, like I don't want to look to the future, you know. I'm in the now, you know. In the now is like 2 years ago or whatever it is, but this is like what 2014, right?
It's catching up pretty quick.
Yeah,
yeah, they're already in a 14.
Yeah, I mean, I would much rather kind of see, you know, like 2013, you know, late 2014 or whatever. I kind of want to see other guys besides this match. But I thought, you know, both matches were good. But I think Okada kind of hurts himself a little bit, you know, like when he starts talking about the matches and stuff, and he just doesn't have that same kind of
fire
flair that Nakamura has, you know, like Nakamura, like you'll watch a match with Nakamura and like, you know, it'd be a really good match. And Nakamura was like, well, the reason why I enjoyed myself so much was because this guy's not in my league. So I was able to enjoy myself a lot. And Okada's like, well, I've never beat, you know, AJ Styles. And I'm really interested to see what's going to happen in the future. It's like, mm-hmm. come on, dude, you know, like show some personality. You're supposed to be the rainmaker. Yeah. It's like this guy that's just like this egomaniac and stuff, and you're being humble and stuff. It doesn't really work.
Yeah, I think he does pretty well in the promos in the ring, but those like kind of backstage promos, yeah, it's like he's breaking kayfabe, and Nakamura never breaks kayfabe.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the thing that I think makes Nakamura a little more interesting in that style of promo. But I just, for me, it was more that I thought the AJ and Okada match from the week before was just superior in terms of, like, not just the ring work, but the storytelling. You had a heel turn. Like, everything surrounding that match, like, was just done really well. And then this match was just felt like the obligatory rematch that you knew AJ had to get through before he could move on to the next guy.
Yeah.
That's all it was.
It's good. Good analysis right there, man.
Thank you.
Good. Bury your horrors yourself right now. Game of Thrones. You watch it?
Yes.
What did you think?
What
stood out to you? What stood out to you in this? What was it? A good premiere? How about that?
Yeah, it was different than what you expect a Game of Thrones to premiere to be, because generally, like, they come out and they do something crazy right from the jump. But it just felt like they just kind of reminded you of where every character was and set you up for the crazy run that they're all about to go on. So I thought it was much more of a setup episode than other, like, series premieres have been. But it did the job for me. I mean, I'm pumped up to see the next one.
So a little background. So the storyline that they're in now, with the way the books are, the book preceding that, when you had everything go down, was a very slow book, very, very slow. Just like, God, I'm like, I got to read this. It's like, come on, dude, like, get to the point. Mm-hmm. And in the ending, when the imp kills his dad and stuff, and then you're just like, what the hell just happened here? Mm-hmm. And then, so parts of that book, like Jon Snow, is not involved at all. Like, you don't see anything about Jon Snow. There's no Daenerys in there or whatever it was. So this is kind of, you needed to have a lull. You needed an episode like this to kind of establish everything, but you know, the next one's going to pick up because you're going to have what's her name kind of travel, and I don't want to tell you what's going to happen with her, but
no, the setup episode is like, it's like you're playing this big game of Risk, and everyone just cashed in all their
armies. Right when I'm ready to beat you.
Please. Everyone's got their, like, just cashed in for big armies on different parts of the board. And you're not about to see everybody converge and go to war. That's kind of the feeling I got right now.
Yeah.
Like, I thought Jon Snow came off really well.
That's the guy. That's what I wanted to bring up. I mean, that Snow, the last 5-10 minutes was really good.
Yeah, because he was, what's his name?
The king.
No. The guy that got burned.
Mance Rayder or whatever?
Yeah, Mance Rayder. Mance Rayder came off looking like a stud. Mm-hmm. And, when he showed the respect to Jon Snow, and then, like, I think in a time where, like, Stannis was looking for, like, for Mance to kind of be that bridge between him and this wilding army that he wants, Mance stood on principle, and then I think, like, Jon Snow, like, earned all the respect of all the other wildlings, because they knew, like, you know, he had no say in Mance getting burned, but they saw that he had enough respect that he didn't want to see him go out like that. And so I think it kind of sets up Stannis to use Snow as an intermediary between the wildlings, would be my guess. As a person that hasn't read the book.
Yeah, there's neither here nor there. Nor the new. It's fine Scottish weather.
The rain's coming all straight down, not sideways.
So I can't do that like you did, so I'm not even going to try. All right, so we have a Moon Scale number 106. We always try to introduce ourselves, but we never do. This is Bet I Have My Donuts. Over here, wearing the nice shirt of me and you, your mama and your cousin too, from Outkast, which a lot of people kind of forgotten already.
Yeah. Elevators.
Yeah.
Outkast is like old now.
Yeah, Elevators. But when that song came out, that's when we started liking them, and then we started delving into their first album, realizing that the first album was really good too. Speaking of the South, you know, with Southern rap. So we have Bet I Have My Donuts over here. I'm Bad News Ramen. Moon Scale number 106, and we'll check you out next week.
That's right. Be got all. Bust your shit, start your windpipes, and quickly break your elbows. Put my foot in your ass, Lord. Feel the force like a racehorse, or like I heard a buffalo. Tell me why you be acting so with the Spanish flow like Julio. Let they rock and die hard. Freeze like Jelly Willy the Eskimo. Vigilante like Steven Seagal. A bust the Desperado. You fucking with the all time pros. Spot the zoom lens. Angry niggas from transistor radios. Mission impossible when I expose. Once I diagnose those who be creeping.
basement. Blow them off, they dip their toes. Sorry, fake nigga, that's how it goes. Bought the straight front bulletproof vests in case you complicate my dough. Handle situations pronto. Appearances got you all hearing this when I be doing cameos. Should be wild hot like Tabasco. Fuck the fool ass nigga, trespassing, caught up in my last hole. Stick a nigga bad like the last hole. Running up on motherfuckers late night, jumping out the Astro. No, 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 no. If you violate, I thought who dictate just like Fidel Castro. Make you dreadlock your afro. And when I'm done, I ride off the theme music by my man D'Angelo. We make this shit wow.
I got the muscle buster, we make this shit wow.
We got come on complete, we make this shit wow. Oh, y'all rude boys, lick a shot.
I got the muscle buster, we make this shit wow.
We got come on complete, we make this shit wow.
I got the muscle buster, we make this shit wow.
Oh, y'all rude boys, lick a shot. We got come on complete, we make this shit wow.
I got the muscle buster, I make this shit wow.
We got come on complete, we make this shit wow. Yo, all y'all rude boys, lick a shot.